Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. It's not yet known what the flying objects are that were shot down in Alaska, Canada, and over Lake Huron since Friday, but they're apparently different from the Chinese spy balloon taken down earlier this month off the South Carolina coast. CBS's Skylar Henry.
White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby.
Efforts are actively underway right now at all sites to find what is left of those objects so that we can better understand and communicate with the American people what they are.
National security officials say there is no indication that these are alien aircraft, bringing a lighter moment to Monday's White House press briefing.
I loved E.T., the movie, but I'm just going to leave it there.
Chinese officials are accusing the U.S. of using its own surveillance balloon program to spy on China. Kirby says the U.S. is not flying balloons over China's airspace.
According to CBS's David Martin, a U.S. official says the F-16 fired two Sidewinders over the weekend. Not clear if the first malfunctioned or missed in one of those cases. Over 37,000 people have died in last week's earthquakes in Turkey and Syria. Rescue workers pulled a 13-year-old out from the rubble, but CBS's MTS Taieb reports that's happening less often now.
When it comes to the recovery effort, just today the United Nations has announced that that part of their job has ended effectively today, and they are now going to be focusing purely on humanitarian needs, which of course is food, water, medical supplies, and indeed psychological help as well.
A person driving a U-Haul truck, according to police, went on a violent rampage, mowing down pedestrians and a police officer in New York City. Eight people were injured. CBS's Errol Barnett with more.
Sources identified the driver as 62-year-old Wang Soar, who may have been living out of the truck, which had been rented in Florida. The suspect has a Nevada's driver's license, and after his arrest, law enforcement sources say Soar allegedly told police, quote, "I want to die."
The suspect is in custody. Civil rights attorney Ben Crump is calling on the Department of Justice to investigate inmate deaths at the Harris County Jail in Texas, where he says there have been 50 deaths since 2021. Crump and family members of inmates who've died are calling for the jail to be closed.
There's more brutality that has happened. Where there's smoke, there's fire. And there's a fire going on in Harris County Jail.
There's now a federal investigation underway after a plane in December dipped very close to the ocean after taking off from Hawaii.
The United Airlines plane dropped more than 1,400 feet a minute after takeoff, eventually being only 775 feet from the ocean's surface before climbing back up. The plane had taken off on December 18th as Hawaii was experiencing stormy weather. United says after an investigation, which is ongoing, additional training was provided for the two pilots. The plane wound up at its destination of San Francisco from Maui. Matt Piper, CBS News.
This is CBS.
WAUK 540 AM. Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. The jets that shot down the unidentified object over Lake Huron yesterday came from Madison. The F-16s belong to the Minnesota Air National Guard, but happen to be at Truax Field. It's the third time in as many days an unidentified object was shot down by U.S. forces in North American airspace. The object was spotted flying over Wisconsin for a time this weekend. The F-16s destroyed the object about 15 miles off Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Wisconsin election officials are testing voting machines before next week's primary election. A public voting machine test was held in Madison Saturday to give voters confidence in the system. Wisconsin voters will narrow the field of state Supreme Court candidates to two a week from tomorrow. Early voting for the primary is open through Sunday. In sports, ESPN reports the New York Jets are asking the Packers about trading for quarterback Aaron Rodgers. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good. It's not-
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation with I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
Oh. We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Wait a minute. How about this? Listen to me, you lantern-jawed cretin, you horned-eyed homunculus. You are going to do what's right for the people of Wisconsin. You're putting cancer water in our water, destroying the greatest university system in the country, and public education. Knock it off. That is unlikely to be said. That's what I'd say.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha, WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So with all the questions going on in Ohio around the railroad industry, again, I keep coming back to the reality is what's going on there has everything to do with the fact that we've allowed them to monopolize. We've allowed them to be deregulated to the point to where they're supposed to be watching themselves. And we've given them so many waivers on the few regulations that are out there. It's almost like, why bother at this point? And the question is if we've given them this power and this control, isn't it time that we start, looking at clawing some of that back? I know I've got friends who say we need to nationalize the rails. I got friends who say we should have let the railroad workers strike, all of this. And look, the rail industry is just a small part of the entire country as we've moved away from overseeing and holding corporate America accountable. That's why I've asked Tom Nelson to come talk with us. He's the Allegheny County executive and author of One Day Stronger, How One Union Local Saved a Mill and Changed an Industry and What It Means for Manufacturing. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Or you can just go to his website, onedaystrongerbook.com. We'll get links out on social media. Tom, thanks for taking time for us.
Good to be back on. I always enjoy my time with you guys.
So, I'm looking at the story coming out of East Palestine, Ohio, and I keep coming back to the fact that we've given so much power and so much control to these big corporations that we're never going to hold them accountable with today's framework. And it comes back to us.
I think that this is yet another reason why we need to do everything we can to strengthen the labor movement. I mean, we need to have some sort of weight that's going to counterbalance it, whether it comes to worker safety or whether it comes to community safety. Yeah, in Wisconsin, we had a derailment, must have been like 25, 26 years ago. And this has happened everywhere, and it can continue to happen. And I think this is also a case in point where, having strong unions that are able to counterbalance corporate powers, not something that's just good for the economy, good for those workers and those families, but also good for those communities. Because if a workplace is safe, then a community is safe. And that clearly was not the case there. And in the article that that came out in the Progressive, we talked a little bit about the challenges we're having here in Wisconsin. I know what we're going up against here is something that folks are dealing with all over the country.
Now, Wisconsin, back in 2011, we were sleeping on the floor of the Capitol when Walker rammed through Act 10 and attacked labor unions, especially public sector workers. I remember at the time, coming back to Pennsylvania going, get ready. This is going to be the playbook that sweeps across the country, being told, no, don't worry about it. That's just Wisconsin. And and my mind goes to this place that, we've had such bad leadership for so long in a lot of these places. It's remarkable to me. But you talk to the average working person and they seem to get it. I mean, when we traveled through Wisconsin and talked to workers on both sides, Republican and Democrat, they want somebody who's going to fight for their jobs, who's going to fight for their ability to make a living and their family's ability to get ahead. That doesn't seem like uncharted territory, somewhere where Democrats should thrive.
Well, you have to realize, too, we have to remember that the first and foremost, the modern-day Democratic Party coming out of FDR is an economic coalition. And that's the reason why leftist center parties all over the free world, most of those political parties are called labor parties. And so Democratic Party has got to go back to its roots. And we know that when you have candidates that focus on that, and you mentioned, Rick, that when you're going around talking to union workers, they're both Democrats and Republicans. And for a lot of these private sector and trades especially, there are more Republicans than Democrats. And so we have them in our fold. They're sitting right there. They're in the palm of our hand, and yet we are ignoring them. And yet we have this opportunity to engage them, to bring them in the fold, and we're not doing that. There was a study that was done about a year and a half ago called Factory Towns. And it was, I think, politically speaking, economically speaking, I think it's one of the most important studies that has been done. A lot of times we talk about how the suburbs have turned away from the Republican Party because of Donald Trump and that there have been Democratic gains. Yes, there has. But where the big losses and where the big opportunity is in these small towns that are undergirded by a factory, whether it's a paper mill, a steel mill, you name it. Because here in Wisconsin, while there's been a shift to the tune of maybe plus 10,000 or 20,000 in the Democratic column, we have seen Democrats lose over 100,000 in these smaller communities. So, Rick, when you're going around Wisconsin, going around the country, the communities that you probably spent the most amount of time with were those small towns, medium-sized town, factory towns. And not only do we need to pay more attention to these folks, because that is who the Democratic Party is. It's a progressive county that's it's a progressive party that is grounded in an economic coalition. But politically speaking, that is the key for a long-run, sustainable, progressive coalition that wins elections and then votes and works for and leads for working families.
So how do you get that message out? Because, look, the sad reality is that's the Democratic Party that I'm a part of. But it's been painted as the Democrats are these extreme leftists who are on these cultural issues and all of this extreme things that some of those working people aren't on board with. How do you balance those different worlds?
Well, I think before we start messaging, and we always talk about messaging, I think there has to be some substance. There has to be some policy. And I believe that the only way that you're going to make substantial inroads in these communities is with transformative change, whether it comes in the healthcare system, whether it comes in trade policy, economic policy, tax policy, you name it. I think ARPA funding, the COVID money, those have been very effective and bringing these communities that were, you know, staring down the abyss and coming back after the pandemic. But if you really want to win hearts and minds of these factory towns, these small and medium-sized communities, we have to start speaking the economic language. We also have to look at long-run trends. Going back to, Rick, you're talking about corporate power that's run amok. Well, one thing we have let go is antitrust laws, and we've allowed these monopolies. And these monopolies in every single industry. I mean, wherever you go, everything from tractors to bacon to foodstuffs, all of that is based pretty much concentrated in the hands of two or three companies. And 2 years ago, during the pandemic, when we saw the price of bacon just go through the roof, and people are thinking, oh, it has to be for the Democrats who are spending, the Democratic policies have shut down the economy. No, it's because we've allowed corporate power, both Democrats and Republicans, we have allowed consolidation, in that example, in the pork industry, so there's only a couple of suppliers. So if you have a pandemic and you choke off a couple of supply points, boom. You know, the entire market craters. So we have to talk about, you know, busting up these monopolies. And of course, that's going to redound to the benefit, not just in urban centers, but in these rural communities. You know, you go down, downtown Lodi or Marinette or all these communities that once had a thriving downtown, because you've had consolidation in agriculture, big ag, you've had consolidation in the banking sector, you've had consolidation in retail, you only have maybe one branch office of like PNC Bank or something like this. You don't have the local small town banks anymore. And instead of having a thriving downtown, you got a Walmart on the edge of town. So what Democrats have to do is we have to go in and we need wholesale constructive, you know, change in the economy. And I think once we start not nibbling around the edges, but once we have a real impact on antitrust, monopolies, tax policy, trade policy, once we start doing that, then I think we can really start making inroads, and then we can start talking about messaging. But right now you have two tracks. One, we have everything we can to make that kind of transformative change. At the same time, you're right, Rick, we have to work on messaging because it's just not good enough.
No, and in your piece, it's time to railroad the oligarchs over at the Progressive Magazine. And we'll get links out on social media, how you can check out Tom's most recent piece over there. You talk about the sick day issue with the railroads. And I said it was a huge mistake for Biden to not use that moment and the bully pulpit that came with it to call for sick days for everyone. I knew from the beginning there was never going to be a strike allowed. They weren't going to allow that to happen and stop whatever economic gains we were having. But there could have been a moment where they spun this and they're going, look, you know, these workers should have sick days, but, you know, so should everybody else. This could have been that moment of going, this is a national call for everyone, not just these handful of workers here, but everyone. And they missed that opportunity.
That's right. That's right. We have to realize, too, that the railroad industry is not nationalized, that these were all companies whose profits depend on the blood, sweat, and tears of workers. And so if the workers were going to strike, I think that would be very bad for their business model. So you're right. We had these companies. We had them in the vice grip, and we could have gotten something more from them, but we didn't. And I make mention of that because you only have so many of these opportunities where you can go in and not just do the right thing. You mentioned messaging. I mean, how can you message a policy if you have this opportunity and you don't take advantage of it? Here you have, and my guess is, railroad unions are like private sector unions here in Wisconsin or the trades. There's probably more Republicans than Democrats. And so you had the Democrats and the Republicans there, and we had an opportunity to show those Republican railroad workers that the Democratic Party is on your side, not the side of the bosses, and whose side did we fall down? It was another missed opportunity. And we only have so many of these opportunities. We have to take advantage of it. And every opportunity that we let go is one more thing that makes our messaging that much more difficult because we lose credibility.
No, and it's exactly right. Every time I bring up the fact that, you know, Biden is moving something that's helping workers. Well, he didn't help those railroad workers. Well, they don't want those railroad workers helped either. But it's the talking point. It's what they throw up in your face. Mm-hmm. And sadly, it's hard to put that down. Now, I do know that they're still negotiating. I do know probably by the end of this year that they're going to get a handful of sick days, not the 15 that they wanted, but I'm told by my friends in the different unions that they're going to get, three or four. That's mm-hmm. going to happen, but that's mm-hmm. still not where we think they should be. At least that's where my thought is.
Yeah, and what we're looking at here, I mean, to take an example here in Wisconsin, we have Local 578. I know that when you did your tour, you stopped by Local 578 in Oshkosh. So the workers there at that facility, Oshkosh Defense, they were owed the contract that Oshkosh Corporation got from the federal government to build the next generation of postal vehicles. So based on the track record, the work ethic, the production that the union workers in Oshkosh did, they got the contract, but then they sent the contract down to non-union South Carolina. So here is, again, just like with the railroad strike looming, Democrats had an opportunity to get out in front of this and do something, anything, to show those hard hats inside Oshkosh Truck, most of which have Trump stickers on, Republican stickers. This was an opportunity for people like Tim Jacobson, the lead steward, to go in there and say, you know what, there's a reason why we endorse Democrats. There's a reason why Bernie Sanders came to our union hall, because Democrats stand up for this. But it's been crickets. There has been little to no support. The only major national voice that's got behind these workers is AOC. Because on a committee, back when Democrats were in charge, they brought some of the postal workers up and basically called them carpet. You know, look at what you're allowing happen. This is union busting, plain and simple. And she was the only one who spoke up for those workers. Yeah. If we are going to be able to message, if we are going to be the party of the of working families, we cannot lose these opportunities. And we need more people than just Tom Nelson, AOC, champion those workers.
No, I'm right
there
with
you. There's another example.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Tom Nelson. He's the Outagamie executive. Running for re-election, I understand, right?
Yes, sir. So this would be my fourth term. I am the, I guess, the last progressive who holds, who represents a red county in Wisconsin. So naturally, I've got some opposition. I've got some competition. People are thinking after the Senate run that I'm vulnerable. So I've got some money, got some resources coming in after me. So we've been working really hard, knocking on doors. We have attached my campaign to the whoever the progressive comes out of the Supreme Court race. And then I'm going to do everything, not just for my campaign, but to add votes and to help the top of the ticket, the Supreme Court. Because if Wisconsin can flip this open conservative seat on our court, it changes everything. It makes Wisconsin, puts us on track to be a blue state and puts us on track to make sure that Joe Biden is reelected, because with a court that respects the rule of law, that's not going to go ahead and rubber stamp gerrymandered districts, voter suppression laws. We can reverse all of that. And in the state that, you know, you win statewide elections by 20,000 votes, 23,000 votes, if you were to improve, if you were to get rid of those voter suppression laws, you know, you go from winning 20,000 votes to 60,000 votes, or instead of losing by 20,000 votes, winning by 20,000 votes. So that is what is at stake. The spring election here, The Hill, Politico, you name it, have called Wisconsin Supreme Court race one of the most, if not the most important race in 2023 in the entire country.
Yeah. And your race too. If you want to check out Tom Nelson's website, nelsonforcountyexecutive.com, we'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. I did want to get your thoughts before I let you go on the most recent story that Oshkosh lost an enormous contract, something like $8.6 billion contract. Yeah. What is that going to mean for those workers in Oshkosh?
You know, this is at the doorstep of the C-suite of that corporation. What they try doing is try being penny wise, pound foolish. They thought, okay, we can take this contract, make some more money, because we can send down to South Carolina where people are willing not to be part of the union and willing not to earn as much money. And so what happens is, rightfully, there is a controversy, because that contract should not have gone to South Carolina, should have stayed in Oshkosh. Well, so now you have another contract for which Oshkosh is up for. Do you think the federal government really wants to have controversy surrounding another contract? No. So Oshkosh shot themselves in the foot 2 years ago when they tried being cute, and it generated all this controversy, and it hurt their chances. They did it to themselves, hurt their chances to get more contracts. And once again, who suffers? The workers. Because another reason why people like Tim Jacobson and Bob Link fought really hard for that contract is because their generation, and there are so many workers there that they needed this contract, and then they could lock in their retirement. They lost that contract. Now they're losing this contract. So you talk about how there is a labor market where there's all kinds of jobs available. The reason why this doesn't translate to average working families is because it doesn't translate into good paying union jobs, and because it means working for a corporation like Oshkosh that allows these billion-dollar contracts, multi-year billion-dollar contracts, go someplace else. Shame on them.
Yeah, shame on them. I saw that, and I go, you know how this is going to go. Those workers in Wisconsin are going to get screwed, and they're going to just keep moving stuff to South Carolina where corporate America can profit more, and the workers, again, get the short end of the stick. Tom, I appreciate the thoughts. Great article. I hope folks will take a look at it. It's time to railroad the oligarchs over at the Progressive Magazine. We'll get links out on social media. Also, check out Tom's book, One Day Stronger. You can get that at onedaystrongerbook.com. We'll get links out on that as well. But, Tom, appreciate the time, man.
Good to be back on. Thanks, Rick.
Good stuff. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. I want to hear your thoughts, questions, comments, anything on your mind. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible two-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Evidently, Florida is considering, and this is one of those, again, you gotta love Florida. Evidently, Florida is considering ending their offering of AP classes. Let that sink in for a second. The tens of thousands of high school students in Florida that take these advanced placement courses so they can have, you know, a competitive edge in college and all that stuff. DeSantis says he wants to reevaluate the state's relationship with the private company that administers those courses and SAT exams. Hmm. Yeah, there is that. Because again, you know, this is one of those things that the right does masterfully. When they get their hooks into something, it's about the punishment. It's about the playing the victim and then the punishment. And this is all over the fact that there's an AP course on African-American history, which I think there should be. I think there should be a course on African-American history. Because I got to tell you, when we did our tour back in 2015, and we went to all the places that now have museums and centers and institutes and all kinds of stuff, learned a ton of stuff that I didn't know. I knew we'd always treated black people poorly. I knew that. Knew we'd treat them horribly. Heard the stories of, you know, the big stories. But wow. I mean, really, wow. When you go into some of these places and you actually learn about the history. Now, did I feel bad? Yeah, I felt horrible. Was I responsible? No. No, it wasn't me doing it. But this is one of those moments where in those spaces, in that moment, you've got to then go, yeah, look what Grandpappy did. Look what that generation, you've got to own that at some point. So having that bit of history, I think, is important. And if people wanted to take an AP course in that, it should be offered. Now, again, you know, the right-wing message is, it would make people feel bad. I'm not buying. Not buying at all. Interesting bit of information I want to throw out there. Evidently, today, top-level advisory came from the U.S. government to American citizens in Russia. And I can't believe that they have to do this. But evidently, there's a level 4 warning that if you're visiting Russia, if you're going to Russia, if you're in Russia, maybe don't. The warning marks the highest level, they say, level 4 of alerts issued by the State Department, which ranges from exercising precaution to ceasing all travel. This is don't do it. Now, here's the thing. The war in Ukraine, the Russians invading Ukraine, almost a year ago. If you haven't gotten the message to gather the sheep and get the flock out by now, I don't know what's in that for you. I got questions. But the U.S. government is saying, hey, maybe you should, I don't know, maybe you should consider somewhere else. And I agree. Quick break, right back.
WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. A developing situation. Multiple shootings reported around the Michigan State University East Lansing campus, with multiple injuries reported. The first incident was reported near Berkey Hall. Campus and community members have been told to shelter in place. The White House defends the decision to shoot down three flying objects in the last few days. Officials said they could pose a risk to civilian air traffic. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby.
These missions were completed successfully and safely. Efforts are actively underway right now at all sites to find what is left of those objects so that we can better understand and communicate with the American people what they are.
Over 37,000 people are reported dead in Turkey and Syria a week after devastating earthquakes in the region. In Aleppo, UNAID Chief Martin Griffith says the focus will soon shift from locating survivors to providing relief.
The urgency of providing shelter, psychosocial care, food, schooling, and a sense of the future for these people.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
WAUK 540 AM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. Foxconn employees at the facility in Mount Pleasant filed a federal class action lawsuit last week, alleging the company regularly shaved time off their timesheets, thus violating federal and state workers' rights laws. The suit also claims Foxconn didn't pay employees bonuses or overtime. The Foxconn Technology Group says in a statement it won't comment on the lawsuit's specifics. The plaintiffs are seeking a jury trial. Safe, affordable housing and rental units are a top priority in Governor Evers' 2023-25 budget proposal. The governor is proposing a comprehensive multi-pronged package of initiatives, including renovating existing housing, improving rental unit safety, providing legal aid for evictions, and expanding renter protections. The governor sends his budget proposal to the legislature this week. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold,
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Monday mornings at 8 on the Shaw and on the Civic Media app.
Monday morning at 8, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Monday morning at 8 on the Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Telling my girls about my Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard.
But mom's early detection gave us time to make a plan.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So there is another explanation for the classified documents by Trump. And I thought we'd had all of them. I thought we'd had all the... They were pretty. I liked them. They were good souvenirs. And they were evidently empty. This is... It seems like maybe instead of, you know, staying up nights, you know, tweeting nonsense, he's now dreaming up reasons for having classified folders. The latest one is evidently a lawyer for Trump has put forth this idea that he was just using it as a block for a nightlight, a light on his nightstand. Evidently, there was an old style dial phone that had a, you know, one of those landline phones, had a blue light on it, would keep him awake at night. So he used the folder, you know, the classified documents folder, to block the light. So crazy. Yeah, who knows? So crazy. I gotta tell you, I think I believe it. I'm shock of all shocks, I'm actually gonna believe this. Here to share some thoughts on the craziness of the day and the top stories, our good friend, former Ohio Congressman and political analyst Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you.
So you buy in it was just the blue light. He just shielding the blue light because he couldn't sleep at night.
I believe anything anymore. Not that I believe what they say. I just believe anything. That you're going to hear anything.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. It is just crazy. Most recent Politico Morning Consult poll out, 54% of voters say not happy when the people heckled the president. I would have thought it'd been higher.
Well, I would have. I was the next day, I had a couple of teachers have some students contact me to ask me, you know, one, my opinion of it. And two, what happened during the time I was in Congress, you know. And three, did I think there was a way for this to stop? And I guess I would want to think more people didn't like it, but I guess this is a sign of the times because you got to get back at this and you got to get back at that. But I did tell them, maybe my brain's getting older, but in general, yeah, you might hear a couple of moans or people don't applaud, but during my time there, I really don't recall outrageous outbursts and screaming out. I just don't recall it. Maybe I'm forgetful. It wasn't anything to the level of what happens today.
No, I
don't know why it's done. And then the other question that the teachers asked was, you know, can this stop? Well, I guess. I don't know. You know, what is it? Stupid is stupid, and I guess you can't stop it.
Stupid is a stupid does.
You know, and there's been, you know, Republicans more. It's happened both sides, a few things that shouldn't. But I think the screaming out of the liar is, you know, one of the worst parts of it. And I don't know. I was disappointed. I just don't recall it being that bad.
Yeah,
when I was there.
I had to get your thoughts on this story. The Washington Post over the weekend came out with a story on Jared and Saudi Arabia. And you've been talking about this from, you know, the beginning, you know, the fact that when they left
time.
The White House, you know, Jared got a nice, you know, big couple billion dollar, a little bit of money to run his next venture with. And I don't think it got enough scrutiny. This LIV golf tournament, I don't think is getting enough scrutiny. But I wanted to get your thoughts on it.
Well, I think if you look at what happened with Trump and Mohammed bin Salman, if in fact the White House, and Trump was president, had come down hard on Mohammed bin Salman, he was on the edge. I'm not saying on the edge of stepping down as the crown prince at the time, because, you know, now he's technically prime minister. He's actually not the king, because the king has... dementia, Alzheimer's. But had Trump weighed in when the rest of the world did on the Khashoggi murder, then Mohammed bin Salman, again, may not have stepped down, but he wouldn't have had the cushion that he had. Once the most powerful country on earth weighed in on it, that was it. I believe I'm correct in saying that Jared Kushner at one point in time was making 85 phone calls a month to Mohammed bin Salman. Most people don't make 85 phone calls a month to their wife.
Yeah.
And you know, And he did.
Because she won't answer the phone.
Right. And, you know, now, in April of 2022, the New York Times reported Kushner received $2.5 billion in Saudi-backed funds. Also, there was a report issued by, you know, some of the top consultants that the kingdom was given that said, don't make investments like this. And then, according to the Post, of course, there was a report revealing how Kushner's company concealed the source of the funds. And then on an SEC form, a box reading sovereign wealth funds and foreign official institutions was left blank. Now, I don't know how. I mean, look, I did a bad boo-boo, and I went to prison, and blah, blah, blah. I understand all that. I don't know how you get away with doing these things.
Well, what's that saying about people who kill people? You know, you kill one person, you go to jail, you kill 20, you go to a mental hospital, and they observe you, you kill a million, and wow, you're remembered in history. Maybe your crime wasn't big enough.
Right. Yeah, maybe I should have. I don't know, done something worse. But I'm looking at this. He secured $2.5 billion in funds for the company of Affinity Partners. Of course, I said a long time ago, before Kushner left the White House, that there was going to be definite collusion, definite involvement, definite business interest, because Kushner did any single thing that the Saudis wanted. And remember something else, too, here. Rick, you know, the Iran nuclear deal was rolling back the centrifuges. Yes, I understand there were some messy parts to the deal. I understand some ballistic missiles weren't included, but the main centrifuges were rolled back under the nuclear deal. Secretary of State, the first one for Trump, said, keep it. Trump did. Bolton comes in. The next thing you know, Kushner has this cushy relationship with Saudi Arabia, and the main people who wanted that Iran nuclear deal dead were the Saudis.
Yep.
And it died. Now, I think Bolton was the front cover guy. Yeah, he wouldn't like it. But I think Kushner was the inside guy that didn't want that to remain either. And that was at the bidding of the Saudis. So I guess I'll throw this out here. If you did all these things for them, if I did all these things for them, I would expect they're probably going to turn around and do all kinds of things for us. And that's what's happened here. It's logical.
No, it's the quid pro quo. So where are the folks who are going to do the investigations into this? And also, I understand, according to the Washington Post, that the Saudi real estate company plans to build, as part of their $4 billion resort, a Trump hotel. So again, it seems, you know, there's a lot of this kind of, I don't know, shady kind of hand-holding. And then you look at the money that's in this golf tournament, this enormous amount of gut money. It just seems like a lot of quid pro quo.
Oh, we have government agencies, we have SEC, we have Department of Justice that looks into these things. And like any of this, there's a couple of arenas here. One, was there a, you know, tit for tat that was done? Or two, and this is what happened in my case, was there influence peddling? In other words, a stream of things of value that happened due to a relationship. All right? So you have to look at this. Were there a stream of things that occurred as a result of the relationship? I think we can answer that. Somebody in the legal realm is going to have to answer it.
Yeah. Now, what we see from Republicans so far out of the box as they control the House, we've now got this House Committee on Weaponization. Evidently, a subcommittee on the weaponization of the federal government. They've had their first hearing or so. Not on Jared, not on these shady dealings. But I guess Twitter, Hunter Biden's laptop, I guess this is what we're going to get? This is the focus?
Well, I think it's going to be, the thing about the Hunter Biden deal, I'm not sure, though. Discovery is an ugly thing. We can look at this two ways, because the lawyers are going to come back to Hunter Biden's lawyers, and they're going to want discovery. We want to know this, where's that, where's right. These emails. Well, somebody would normally say, which I was questioning today, do you really want that discovery? But then again, if they have the laptop and they have everything on the laptop, then why would you be afraid of discovery? You can look at it that way, too.
Right.
So it's kind of a pushback by Biden's lawyers. And, of course, they have the right to discovery, too. And for those people not familiar with it, that means that Hunter Biden's lawyers can ask people that are on the opposite side of this legal issue that they want discovery of, you know, who did what? Were there consultants hired to deal with Hunter Biden? You know, there's a lot of discovery that could be also embarrassing for the Republican side.
No, I think, look, if it's all going to go bad anyway, if you're Hunter Biden, I don't know that there's a downside to this.
Yeah, that's what I say. If they do have the laptop and anything on there is probably what I'll call automatic discovery.
Yeah. Now, the other part of this, you know, there's another part of the whole discovery process. I talked about this last week. Did you see the Brett Favre story?
No.
Brett Favre is suing Shannon Sharp, Pat McAfee, and the auditor of Mississippi for defamation for the speeches that he didn't give and took, you know, $1 million for, and the lobbying he did for the volleyball facility for his daughter's volleyball team at the University of Southern Mississippi. That all came out of TANF funds.
Really?
And he claims this is defamation by saying what I just said. Evidently this is bad. And so he's going to go after and sue ESPN, I guess, or Sharp and McAfee because of their show. And I said that to Sue. You know, discovery is going to be very interesting, Brett, because we'll see what other skeletons are in the closet.
Right. So McAfee, who's now a talk show host, would be the one that they would have to. Well, there'd be discovery on both sides, but that's interesting.
Yeah,
and if he doesn't seem worried about it, then that makes it even more interesting.
No, it's interesting because, you know, again, the one thing I love about the legal system is that whole discovery phase.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm. Correct.
Hopefully we will see. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman, political analyst, talking about the top stories of the day. Wanted to get your thoughts on the balloons. More balloons. Evidently, China is saying that we have flown at least 10 balloons over China this year or since the beginning of 2022. So over the last, you know, what, 12, 14 months, they claim 10 of our balloons have been illegally flown over China. So the question is, are they going to start shooting them down? And do we still use balloons?
We could have flown balloons, like Judge Judy says, come into court with clean hands. Okay. Everybody spies. Okay. Everybody. And if we don't spy on our people, by the way, we have other countries spy on our people. And those other countries have us spy for them. So it's a spy world. We might have balloons. I doubt that we had 10 of them, you know, over there. You know how celebrity deaths come in threes, you know, and all of a sudden you see the story of the balloons, and they came in a third and then a fourth.
Right.
There's probably more. And this has probably gone on here and there, and nobody, you know, said anything about it. Somebody shot it down. Nobody, you know, said a word. I fully expected China to come out, whether it's true or not, and say that we had balloons. And it's like, okay, I'm actually kind of glad we put balloons over there. If they're putting them here, put them over there.
Yeah.
See what they do.
No, okay? Again, this is that Cold War ramp up where we better get ready for it because we better thicken up the spine a little bit and stop with the clutching our pearls.
Yeah, I mean, I think we had to put a balloon over and put Xi's face on it and draw a mustache or something and let it float around.
Until they shoot it down. There's the Bob.
Then they won't shoot it down. Or better, put Kim Jong-un's face on it.
Put one of those big happy smiley faces. There you go. But again, this is another one of those moments where the right is losing their minds. Everything I see now is, you know, about how we're weak for not knowing these balloons are in the air. And you go, you know, I seem to remember this stuff when I was a kid happening a lot. I don't know that it's a weakness not to shoot everything that flies over. I'm just, am I wrong here?
We're shooting things. We don't even know what we're shooting.
Yeah.
Which becomes a problem. Well, you know, a very interesting problem. I mean, now we're into the political panic mode too. But there it is, shoot it down, you know. Now, wait till we accidentally shoot down something, you know, we shouldn't shoot down.
Yeah.
But there is a certain amount of panic over this, and it's like, okay, China floated a balloon, we shot it down. Another one came over Canada, we don't know what it was, we shot it and three others down. They're shooting ours down, okay. If something else comes, shoot it down. And, you know, I'm tired of hearing the word balloon. I don't know about you. Now, you know, of course, now the government threw it out there.
UFO.
Not a UFO, but an object that wasn't identified has now become an alien ship.
Yeah, I know. I'm waiting for us to. I'm waiting for the mothership to come and attack. This is where my mind is now going. It's not really about balloons. It's about something else.
I'm waiting for one to be shot, and all of a sudden you see a faint thing, and somebody records it, and it says it's a boy, or it's a girl. Then they'll stop.
Yes, that. Absolutely that.
Right.
See, now, how do I transition out of this?
I don't know, but I thought it was a good one. I made that up myself.
How do I transition to where I was planning to go next?
Oh, I can transition out.
All right, here we go.
It won't sell well with the Chinese because they'll think that we're maybe making fun of their child limitation policy. Oh. Then we're really in trouble.
Uh-oh. Yeah, now mm-hmm. we're really in trouble. Finally, I wanted to get your thoughts on the rail derailment in eastern Ohio. I know that's your backyard.
Right.
Interestingly enough, the Congressman Bill Johnson finally has come out and said something after Lauren Boebert, complained that Buttigieg didn't mention it, and it's now in the right wing anger center. But he's finally come out. He's now doing the Fox stuff, so he's gonna get a little bit of attention. Any thoughts on the derailment at this point, and how badly it's been reported on, and the fact that we don't know much more than we knew when it happened?
Now who's Congressman Johnson?
He's the congressman for that district. Oh, it's his backyard. If a train derailed in your district, would you not have been on the ball that minute?
Well, that's why I said I barely have heard his name ever, and he's got the old district I had. So.
Oh, okay. Well,
I was being sarcastic here.
Oh, I missed that.
His name finally gets out there for something besides a post office. Okay, But he finally did say something. It was a derailment, major derailment. They've got to find out, you know, about the derailment because it leaked all kinds of things. You know, pretend they had to evacuate, you know, and things like that. And then there's the whole controversy of the reporter, which is another whole story that was handcuffed during the press conference. But, yeah, I mean, I would, you know, that now Salem itself up there in East Palestine wasn't mine, but I was right below it. Jim Trafficant had Columbiana County, and I was right below with Jefferson County. But, yes, I would have came out with a statement, you know, even just something pertaining because it was the region that we're from. Sure, I would have. Absolutely.
Yeah, but, you know, here he is. He's finally come out because there's outrage. There's moral outrage that enough has not been done. And you listen to the Boeberts of the world, they blew up the trains. I had a bunch of people, why'd they blow it up? I go, well, they didn't blow it up. There was explosions to relieve the pressure because they thought it would blow up, which would have been much worse. But at least this is all we're being told. You know, where's all this stuff going? How bad's it going to be for us? What are you doing to protect the people in those areas? How are we trying to make those folks, you know, whole? Are we trying to make them able to weather what I think is going to be, you know, one of the biggest ecological disasters, at least in the last couple of decades?
Right. It is. And you know, they've got to do everything they can do, you know, for the public safety, but also to monitor what the effects are going to be in the people that were removed in the area and the toxic chemicals.
Yeah. Now the mayor of that area, I got a kick out of the mayor. He came out and said that Trent Conaway is his name of East Palestine, Ohio. He said, this isn't going to get swept under the rug. I'm not going to be the country bumpkin that gets talked over by a big corporation. We're going to hold their feet to the fire, and they're going to do what they said they're going to do, and they're going to protect the people of this town. And my response is no, they're not, because they never do.
Right. Especially dealing with railroad management is tough.
Yep.
Very tough.
Well, we'll see. But, Bob, I appreciate the time. Thanks for the thoughts. As always, great stuff. Look forward to having you back again.
Thank you.
Good stuff. No, I mean, the reality is Sorry, Trent. They're not going to. Back after this. Think Tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So, East Palestine, I'm told. Not Palestine. I was corrected. Someone said, no, you're wrong. The area, because of where it is, can't be like, you know, like Palestine, like the Palestinians. No, it's Palestine. And that was the correction. And someone most certainly say, you got to know the area. That's what it is. I'm like, okay. If that's what it is. Now, again, I come back to what Trent Conaway, the mayor, said. We're not going to be the country bumpkin that gets steamrolled. I got to tell you, I think they are, because we allow corporate America to get away with this. And the fact that I go back to where I started at, the reality, this is corporate America doing what they do. This train derailment, over the last couple of decades, massive cuts in employment. Massive cuts in inspection times. As one guy told me, that they used to get 3 minutes to inspect. Now it's down to 90 seconds. Something like 120 points of inspection you've got to go over in 90 seconds. I'm going, I can't even read 120 words in 90 seconds. How are you going to look at and inspect things in that? And it's all because they've slashed all of this employment. It's all because it's about the profit. It's about the money. It's about lining their pockets. And, you know, my concern is that, like any of this stuff, it's that swinging door between the regulators and the industry. And we've allowed this to happen in industry after industry, whereas Congress still hasn't acted on this. You know, it's the same thing with being a Congress member and then going into lobbying the next year. There's got to be a buffer time where you're out of it for a while before you can go back in and start turning, you know, twisting arms and that kind of stuff. Same thing with the regulators. You know, today I can be, you know, regulating an industry, and tomorrow I can be working for it, and the day after I can go back to regulating it again. What sense does that make? Seems like there'd be a cozy relationship where the person who's going to pay you the most may actually have some leverage you might think about. Just kind of a thought. Yeah, it is a weird time that we're in. Most certainly a weird time. And, you know, I go back to when I was a kid, and I still remember the cabooses. And I remember that there were like four or five people on those cabooses back then. There were like, you know, if I remember, like 10, 12 people on a train that was half the size of the ones we see now. Someone told me, train 5 miles long. Can you imagine doing a pre-trip on a train 5 miles long and having to walk around that whole thing in the dark? Yeah, not going to happen. We need this again. Will our Republican friends in the House, will they step forward and go, hey, we're going to investigate this and hey, we're going to fix problems? No, because their ideology is destroy regulations, destroy oversight, and let corporate America do whatever the hell they want. This, another example of that. And again, we've been talking about this for years. None of it is new. None of this is new. This is who they are, what they do. And at some point, I'm hoping, by railing on about this time and time again, that we as working people wake up to the reality that, you know, it's not job-killing regulations that our Republican friends love to scream about. It's the lack of regulation, the lack of oversight, the lack of preventative maintenance, the lack of inspection, the lack of holding people accountable that create these kind of situations. So are we surprised when it happens? Sadly, no. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You got any questions, comments? Make sure you email me. Also, if you miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.